Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It's the 22nd day of April 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, the Senate Agriculture Committee, possibly charged with reining in Wall Street, has moved to limit the ability of banks to trade derivatives. Secretary Vilsack says he wants to leave the writing of the next farm bill to others, but has some administrative advice from the White House. And railroader Union Pacific has reported a 43% increase in first quarter profits. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also in this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau on this 40th anniversary of Earth Day and talk with meteorologist Peter Levitt. In the second half hour of this program on some of the radio stations and online at willag.org, we'll explore the National Pork Producers Council with its president, Sam Carney. It all happens during the Closing Market Report, which is, of course, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby May wheat, a settlement price this afternoon in Chicago at $4.98.5, up 11 and a quarter. July at $5.11, 11 and a quarter higher, and September at $5.27 and a quarter, up 11 and a quarter as well. July wheat in Kansas City for the hard red at $5.21, 10 and a quarter higher. From the corn pit in Chicago, May futures up 3 cents at $3.62 and a quarter. July at $3.71.5, up 2 and a half. September at $3.79 and 3 quarters, up a penny and 3 quarters. And December futures at 3.87 and 3 quarters, up a quarter of a cent. The March contract, though, finished a quarter of a cent lower at $3.99 and a half. May soybean futures, $10.04 and a quarter, up 8 and 3 quarters. July at 10.15, 9 higher. August at 10.11 and 3 quarters, up a dime. And November beans at 9.85, up 8 cents. May bean meal at 295.60, up 260. May bean oil at 39.09, up 19. April live cattle, 99.75, 15 cents higher. April feeders at 112, 12 and a half, up 7.5 cents. And May lean hogs today, a settlement price at $88.37.5 per 100 pounds, up 55 cents. You are listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. June crude oil futures, $83.76 a barrel, up just about 7 cents. Ethanol at $1.58 and 8 cents, 4 tenths of a cent higher. Natural gas at $4.11 and a half, up 16 cents. Heating oil or diesel fuel, 9 tenths of a cent higher at $2.21 and a half. And the gold futures today at $1,142.30 an ounce, down $5.90. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is down just about 28 points at this hour at 11,100. And the U.S. dollar at 81.56 is up 0.40. The CRB index on the afternoon at 277.12 is up 0.37. And the Goldman Sachs at 542.58 is up 1.19 on the day. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like as prepared by our own chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser. He says tonight in central and southern Illinois and southwestern Indiana should be mostly cloudy. Some showers, a few thunderstorms will arrive. Elsewhere, partly cloudy. Lows will range from around 40 in northeastern Indiana to 57 in southwestern Illinois. Tomorrow, Ed says, mostly cloudy skies, widespread showers, some scattered thunderstorms. Highs tomorrow from 54 in northeastern Illinois to 80 in the far south. The extended forecast, our extended period dry weather, is about to come to an end, says Mr. Kieser. Showers and thunderstorms will be common tomorrow through the weekend. Moderate to heavy rainfall at times across Illinois and Indiana. Most locations will receive more than an inch of rain, and some locations could pick up as much as 3 inches before dry weather returns on Monday. Mostly dry and cooler weather expected early next week. Fields will be slow to dry out with the cooler temperature readings. More on the agricultural weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour and we talk with meteorologist Pete Levitt.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois, is along for the ride today. Good afternoon to you, Dan. How are you on this beautiful day?
Doing fine. I wish I was outside.
You know what? I'll bet farmers are moving along. I don't know whether I would call it at a frantic pace, but they probably have things that they'd like to get done before we get a little rainfall. I think that's probably something that they would appreciate at this point in time.
Yes, I have talked to several farmers that would like to have a nice rain, a nice slow soaker. I hope we don't get those 3-inch downpours like you mentioned a little bit here about a couple of minutes ago.
Yeah.
Yes, there are some areas that are in desperate need of a rain. But there is corn up. I did see some corn up this morning when I drove into Decatur here just north of town. I started seeing those little green rows, and there it was. It was corn had popped up out of the ground overnight.
Well, that's a good sign, I suppose, on this Earth Day to have a little corn coming up out of the ground. Not a bad deal, I would think. Hey, let's talk about where this corn market is in the charts. You started to turn a little more friendly at one point earlier in the month. Can you maintain that?
Well, I think so. I think you look back and Monday's decline has the markings of a bear trap. It kind of trapped, I think, a lot of bears in the marketplace. It turned a lot of people bearish that had been kind of taking a bullish stance, I think, all winter. It all kind of stems back, I think, from the March 31st grain stocks report where the market went into a collapse to the downside. Then we had a little recovery, and then we had a big collapse here Monday, and now we've bounced out of that real nicely. Wheat is pulling out of its low, real nice. Actually, we got a little head and shoulders bottom in it, and we closed above the neckline here today. So you're going to hear chartists talk about 550 July wheat. Beans not only was able to hold yesterday's strong advance, we're actually able to kind of gain on that and close right up against the highs. Corn is definitely probably the weakest of the three, but it's right up against a neckline of kind of an ugly head and shoulders objective formation that could be signaling that corn maybe has a 25-cent pop in it. That might be somewhat of a long shot, but knowing watching the technicals, if we would get a nice strong close here tomorrow, I think that opens the gates to kind of go back to those highs that we had here. Let me look here at the chart here real quickly. We had some March 1 highs, Dease corn up around 415. We had, I think, a March high in May corn around 395, July corn at 402. I think those are possible upside targets the way the market has performing here.
Are there good fundamental reasons for the market to do this?
Well, you got to keep in mind that technicians, the whole purpose of technical analysis is to get ahead of the fundamentals. It's to have your position on when the news comes to the marketplace. I would say that in the short run, what we know on the fundamental front, demand has definitely picked up here. Look at our weekly corn sales, 1.4 or 1.5 million tons, one of the best sales of the marketing year. We had some sales announced overnight. That'll be in next week's report. So demand has picked up. Look at the character of the market here. You've got May corn up 3. You got July corn up 2.5. And Dease corn kind of unchanged. So you've kind of got a bull market, bull spread type positioning going on in the corn market. That's a major change from what we have seen. So the demand for beans and soybean meal continues to be very stout. Argentine farmers are generally tight holders of their inventory for several reasons. There's a tax issue, and then that's one way to hedge against inflation. They have a hyperinflationary economy. I don't know if that's where we're headed or not, but that's kind of what's kind of providing some underlying support, I think, to the complex.
And hyperinflation would be something we would not like, but a recovery in the economy, which seems to be happening, might be putting a push from the outside into the commodities. Is that the case?
Well, I think the key here is, if you've kind of noticed over the last few days, and I always watch correlations, is that this market has been able to rally against a stronger dollar, and that is something that it has not been able to do for most of the fall and the winter. And that's caught my eye here this morning quite nicely. Even crude oil prices, energy prices were sharply lower to start with, but now they've come back to unchanged to green, and you've got the dollar up 40 points here. I mean, I look at my screen, and I know it's dominantly ag commodities related, but there's a sea of green on my screen today. Even the dollar's higher, so I think it may be telling us that we are changing things around. It got too comfortable, I think, over the winter months watching the dollar. If the dollar was higher, you sold the grains. If the dollar was weaker, you bought the grains. Maybe that underlying fundamental is changing somewhat.
All well and good for the short term, but you're a technician. When you look out on the longer cycles, does it all bode well too?
I think you can. I think there's some troubling forces maybe down the road, but it may be further down the road than what a guy would initially thought. I think there's room for some pricing opportunities better than what anybody probably would have thought of. But cycles are changing all the time, and you have to be able to kind of blend in the current fundamental picture with previous cycles to see how they will blend in together, and you can kind of use them as a projection. But I would not necessarily be terribly bullish or bearish in election year. I was taught many years ago that if there's any time you kind of want to lay off of the bear side, is you always lay off of it during presidential or even congressional election years.
Yeah, and we'd be in a congressional election year. So when you discuss maybe a guy not being quite as worried about it as early as you thought in the cycles, does that mean you're moving them back from, I don't know, the fall of this year to something further down the road?
Probably could be more further down the road. I mean, for anybody that's followed some of my work over the long-term pull, and you can kind of look at long-term stuff, is you can go back to the 54-year cycle and 27-year cycle. And then the 27-year cycle is made up of like three nines. The last 27-year cycle low here was the mid-80s, 86, 87. You add 27 years onto that, and what do? We get out here, 2012, 2013, as maybe some troubling times. But we're down the road. We'll have to see what happens. I mean, that's a long ways down the road yet.
That is a long ways down the road. So are you a holder of cash grain on new crop at this point for both corn and soybeans?
Well,
for farmers, that is.
I'm going to let everybody make their own decisions on holding grain or selling grain. I think they do have to play things close to their vests. I've been in that camp for some time because we're just in an environment. We just don't know what kind of news we're going to wake up to and how that's going to totally impact commodity prices. I'm big on using minimum, maximum price contracts at the local elevator. It gives you a second opportunity to sell it. If prices are higher at the fall, it gives you an opportunity to take advantage of those higher prices. So I'm big on min-max cash contracts, and I guess I would encourage producers to take a look at those type of tools. If you don't want to do it with your elevator, you can do it with your commodity broker with option positions, which kind of gives you the same position. But I do kind of like that in this current environment that we're in.
Dan Seng, thanks so much for being with us.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois, and joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on this Thursday afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Now, if you'd like to hear Dan again, you can always do that on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Or you can dial this phone number, 217-333-3434. We update it with a bit of analysis and the numbers either from the closing or the opening market report at 10:15 and 3:15 daily.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Rebecca King in Galesburg at 309-341-5007. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
In agricultural news, a Senate panel has approved legislation that would limit the ability of Wall Street banks to trade complex financial tools called derivatives. The bill offered by Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Blanche Lincoln would also improve transparency of most derivative trades. The legislation was approved on a 13-8 vote. Lincoln's proposal is more sweeping than those offered by the Obama administration and the House. Derivatives are financial products, such as corn futures or stock options, that rely on the value of some underlying investment. Companies use them to hedge against risks, but derivatives have become a vehicle for speculation, with critics blaming them for contributing to the financial crisis. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack says the Obama administration will leave the writing of the 2012 Farm Bill largely up to the Congressional Agriculture Committees, but the administration believes the bill should contain a safety net for farmers as well as provisions to help create better off-farm jobs in rural America. Vilsack says USDA would provide an outline or framework of the Farm Bill, but there is no intention to provide a complete farm bill. In testimony before the House Agriculture Committee, Vilsack presented a slideshow of charts that he says indicated the need for creation of better off-farm jobs. Union Pacific Corporation's profits soared 43% in the first quarter because a railroad hauled more goods than last year in every sector except coal. The Omaha, Nebraska-based railroad says that it earned $516 million, or $1.01 per share, in the quarter. That's up from the $362 million, or 72 cents per share, last year. A senior Chinese trade official says that China has no choice but to consider retaliatory measures against Argentina, accusing the South American country of growing trade protectionism toward Chinese products. China's vice commerce minister says that China's imports of Argentine soy oil would not be normalized unless Argentine exporters increase the quality and safety of the product. Published reports in China say that because of external and internal pressure resulting from protectionist moves by the South American country, China, quote, will have no alternative other than to consider countermeasures. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and of Commodity Week, urging you to visit our website, the address, willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Now, up next in today's Listener Opinion Forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkis says, happy 40th anniversary to Earth Day.
In 1970, a senator from Wisconsin named Gaylord Nelson decided to spend one day a year teaching people about things that can harm our environment. Nelson called it Earth Day, and on April 22nd, Earth Day will celebrate its 40th birthday. The first Earth Day was very different than the one we celebrate today. On the first Earth Day, people protested and said they wanted cleaner water and air. Today, we do more than say we want a clean planet. We are taking the steps to make it clean with activities such as recycling household hazardous waste, electronics, planting trees, using renewable fuels, and picking up litter. Farmers are doing their part to protect the air, land, and water, too. Farmers take special care of the land because it is where they live and work. The most precious asset to a farmer is the land, especially the topsoil. According to the most recent updated statewide National Resources Inventory, Illinois farmers decreased soil erosion 35% on cropland from 1982 to the year 2000. This is 52.8 million tons of soil saved each year. That is enough soil to fill a boxcar train from Los Angeles to New York and back again. Homeowners and landowners can protect the soil by planting trees. Trees' roots keep the soil in place, and the rest of the tree provides a habitat or a home for wildlife and birds. From 1988 to 1997, Illinois landowners planted more than 31 million trees. Farmers also help keep our water safe. Water is important to agriculture because without water, nothing will grow. Today, farmers use special equipment, technology, and plant genetics to reduce pesticide and fertilizer use and control when plant nutrients go and where they don't go. According to the University of Illinois, the pounds of pesticide per acre have decreased 25% in the past few years, keeping our water safer. Homeowners can also protect the water by being careful where and when you use chemicals on lawns and gardens. Farmers are keeping the air cleaner by using fuels made from corn, also called ethanol, and soybeans, also called biodiesel. These fuels are made from renewable resources and create less air pollution than petroleum oil. Farmers also raise crops that provide oxygen to help clean the air and reduce pollution in the environment. You can also burn less petroleum oil by using less electricity at home and by using a 10% ethanol-blended gasoline in your car. So after 40 years, are we any more Earth-wise? Are we good to planet Earth? It is the little things we do to protect our environment, and it is never too late to begin. For a farmer, every day is Earth Day. Happy Earth Day. This is Amy Rochkis with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Thursday afternoon. In just 2 minutes, we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Pete Levin. Dave Dickey is back now. He'll take us through the ag business news for the afternoon.
In business news, the International Monetary Fund says that a U.S. recovery spurred by low interest rates and government spending is underway. But it will be gradual because consumers are hurting and fiscal stimulus will wane next year. The IMF says that it projects U.S. national output growing by 3.1% in 2010, but easing to a 2.6% expansion in 2011. The IMF says demand is still subdued and remains well below pre-crisis levels, and job markets remain unusually weak. It projected the U.S. unemployment rate this year at 9.4% and falling only to 8.3% in 2011. Nestle, the world's biggest food group, beat forecasts with a 6.5% rise in underlying first quarter sales, and today was upbeat about its 2010 prospects. Analysts say Nestle was boosted by surprising good growth in Western Europe. Hog and pork producer Smithfield Foods says it expects solid fourth quarter results in its meat segment, even though higher raw material costs will affect margins. Smithfield is scheduled to report fourth quarter earnings on June 17th. And the Labor Department today says that U.S. producer prices rose more than expected in March on strong consumer food and gasoline costs. The seasonally adjusted index for prices paid at the farm and factory gate increased 0.7%, following a 0.6% drop in February. And that's a look at today's business news.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Thursday afternoon. Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us to take a look at the weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, it's a beautiful day here still, but it looks like it's going to get, well, not ugly, but rainy at least.
Yes, it is. The weather is going to head downhill from just about now forward for the next few days. We've got a large storm system aloft over the far southwest, sending out a series of disturbances eastward across the plains, and the first one of these is producing some pretty good rain in eastern Kansas, western Missouri at this time. And that system will work its way slowly eastward tonight and tomorrow, and we should see showers moving into southern Illinois late this evening and tonight, and then working slowly northward through the state tomorrow so that we have most of the state seeing showers of some sort during the day tomorrow, and maybe even a few thunderstorms, mostly in southern portions. That's not going to do much improving on Saturday or Sunday. We see the real rain getting involved on Saturday and then working slowly eastward as the storm center itself aloft finally moves across the state on Sunday. And then we start to get the cooler and the diminishing cloudiness, still with some showers, into Monday.
How widespread across the Midwest will those showers be from Nebraska and the far western part of the Corn Belt to Ohio and the eastern Corn Belt?
Oh, yes. They will cover most of those areas. We'll see most of Nebraska and Iowa seeing activity tonight and tomorrow. That system will shift northward into southern Minnesota. That area of showers is the heavier rain really goes to the south of the eastern Corn Belt, across Arkansas and into Alabama, Tennessee, Mississippi during tomorrow night and Saturday. And then we still get that showers coming across Illinois later Saturday and into Sunday, and then we see the eastern Corn Belt getting it Sunday and Monday. So everybody gets a piece of this.
Yeah, so more locally in the Illinois-Indiana range along the border there. How much rainfall in total do you think over the three-day period?
Oh, I think for the three-day period we're seeing in excess of an inch. It won't be continuous. That is, there'll be some areas with lighter amounts. But I'd say between 1 and 2 inches probably on the higher end, and that would be in Iowa down into eastern Missouri and then over into the Tennessee Valley and another area of 1 to 2 inches across northern Illinois into southern Michigan. I think those are the areas for the 3 days.
And any downpours in that process? Or is it likely to gather just kind of slowly over the period?
It looks mostly warm frontal, which is more of a steady type of rain than the local downpour type of rain. A few showers and thunderstorms down south, that's where we'd see the locally heavier stuff.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the afternoon?
Well, I think this rain is going to put a stop, but it's nice to see that the planting has finally moved ahead on corn, better than it's been any time in the last few years, ahead of schedule. And that it didn't look that way a few weeks ago.
No, it did not.
So now I think the rain will help. get things started, and then it shouldn't last more with improving weather coming the latter half of next week and a return to warmer weather the end of next week.
Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
That's Pete Leavitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. We'll continue on some of these stations with the farming world in just a moment. This is the Farming World News and Interviews from the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Today we'll talk with Sam Carney of Adair, Iowa. Mr. Carney is the president of the National Pork Producers Council. Sam, thank you so much for joining us today. Where are you? You're somewhere at a conference, I believe, today.
Yes, I'm in New Orleans at our packer processor meeting, as we have two meetings each year, and we discuss and work on issues that affect the pork industry, the meat industry. So,
talk to me a little bit about the National Pork Producers Council. What is it? What does it do?
Well, NPPC is made up of investors throughout about 43 different states. Our investors voluntarily check off 10 cents for every $100 worth of value. And we use that money for many issues. A lot of times we work on policy work in Washington, D.C. That's some of our main work. A lot of it is to work on international trade, as there's a lot of issues that involve international trade, so we have to work on that. We do some lobbying efforts, and we do try to pass some regulation or prevent some regulation that may hinder the U.S. pork industry. So,
investors is a word it's a little odd for me to hear somebody refer to the industry as investors. Is that because of the consolidation within the pork industry that there are, you think about it more of as an investment in the efforts to promote pork rather than just as a farmer producing pork and then he pays into the checkoff?
No, when the checkoff, and I can't remember what year it was, I'm going to say it was like 8 years ago when they had the referendum or the separation agreement, I'm sorry, that's what I want to say, separation agreement of the checkoff system, the public policy, and which would be NPPC part of it, and then the checkoff that does research, promotion, and education, which is the National Pork Board side of it, split and went separate ways. That was what the government said had to be done. So the checkoff money is mandatory, and they use that for education, research, and promotion. We, on the other hand, we get investors. I'm a small producer back here in Adair, Iowa, and we'll have anywhere from small producers to large producers that voluntarily have 10 sets off taken out of their check, and it's sent to NPPC. Within return, NPPC gets 60% of that, and 40% goes back to the states to work on legislative issues.
Oh, it's been a very long time since I've worked with the pork producers in this way, so I was not familiar with the change. Thank you very much for that correction. I do appreciate that.
And it's complicated, but if you're not around it, but I've been around it since from day one when we started working on this, so it's... It can be complicated, but it's very clean, and it works very well. And this way our investors, they have the last word on how we go forward in the U.S. pork industry.
Let's talk about some of the topical issues that you're working on. And maybe we can begin with one that our farm and our regular consumer listeners will be familiar with, H1N1. And otherwise known as swine flu in some areas, though most in the agricultural industry will not call it swine flu.
I will not call it that. I can guarantee you that.
No, and I wouldn't either. H1N1 is the way we refer to it, generally speaking.
Yes, it is. And let me go back maybe just a little bit farther, as the U.S. pork industry was went through some very tough financial times even prior to H1N1, as we had extremely good prices the year before, but we had such high input costs, and the U.S. pork industry was losing a lot of money. We started losing money in September of 2007. Then last year when things were starting to get better, some input costs were going down, the demand for our product was starting to look a little better, H1N1 hit. When H1N1 hit, it was one of the most devastating things I've ever seen to the U.S. Pork industry I've ever seen, as we lost China and Russia, plus 30-some other countries, plus we always shipped a lot of pork to Mexico. Now, Mexico did not put us on a retaliation list or or shut down the exports, but they quit eating meat, so we were exporting very little meat. As we had to educate people, work with people, H1N1, people come back. 30-some countries come back, except for China and Russia. Mexico picked up and started buying a lot of pork again. But China and Russia, we had to work with very hard. It took a long time. But here in the last 6 weeks, I believe it is, I'm not sure what the time frame is. I can't remember. All the weeks run together anymore. But we got Russia back on and China back on, and we're starting to export there. So H1N1, it's been a year. It was April 24th last year when it hit, and it's took basically a year to get back what we lost, and we're just starting to move forward now with it. So,
why was it the nation stopped taking imports from the United States, or pork producer imports or pork imports from the U.S. because of H1N1? Was it?
Well, it was because they were using that other name, and it was that name alone had people thinking they were getting it from, they were getting H1N1 from pigs, which was not true. Pork is safe, absolutely the safest food out there, and you could not, but people were relating to that, and it just took a lot of education to get them back to that it isn't true.
Can we go back to when the CDC named it to begin with? And when they named it swine flu. But within the first week, the federal government and President Obama had changed the name to H1N1. How much lobbying or talking discussions did you have to do with the administration to get that done so quickly?
I don't know for sure. We went and talked to them, and they did, it was the CDC's the ones that, I don't know. I think it was such a new thing. Nobody knew what to call it, but they came out. It was an H1N1 influenza, they called it, relative to, and I'm no veterinarian or anything that knows exactly how the name is, but it didn't take that long. And I appraise the Obama administration, and I know Secretary Vilsack from when he was even governor in Iowa. And I give him a lot of credit for hounding the press and everything to call it the right name, that you're hurting the U.S. pork industry doing what you're doing.
Do some of the press still use the wrong name?
What's that?
Do some of the press still use the wrong name?
Yes, they do. It just so happened I was reading an email yesterday on from a certain newspaper out east, and I seen they use both names, so... even though they may correct it part of the time, they still use the other words. So,
and do you have an effort to work with them to see whether you can correct that? And do you have an idea why they continue to use both names interchangeably?
I don't. And we've tried and tried and tried, and it's been a year, and we have other things, issues to work on. And I think most people realize that it's not coming from pigs. It never has come from pigs. Pigs are safe. And that issue is a year old, and we're going to move forward. We have other issues to work on. So,
well, let's move forward then and move on to other issues. Mm-hmm. What sorts of things are we working on in the export market at this time?
Well, that's we're always working, as we've been working extremely hard with Russia and China. Got them back on. China, we see as one of the powerhouses coming up in the future as the population is growing. We are the lowest source of pigs in the U.S., the lowest source of meat. We're the lowest cost of producing pigs. So we have the ability to export probably as reasonable as anybody in the country. We're looking at China as being an explosion. Their economy is increasing. People like to eat meat. They love to eat pork over there. So we see that as a possibility that is just growing and growing and growing over there. So China is something we're going to be working on extremely hard here for quite some time. We've got three pending trade agreements that we just can't seem to get come up. We have Panama, we have Colombia, and we have South Korea. And with those three, right there is almost $12 a pig that would add to the value of the pig. If we could get those free trade agreements passed and start exporting more. Now, as you do that, the tariffs eventually go down, and it helps the U.S. pork industry. It creates jobs, and is that we can export more. And it just makes common sense, but we haven't been able to get that on the legislative agenda at the right time right now. But I think sometime in the near future, we will get that back on the agenda.
Let's take up China in the export market just a bit more. This is a nation that is the largest producer of pig meat in the world. It's hard to imagine that they need to import much in the way of pork, but they also have a very large population. And you think that you'll be able to provide meat directly to them? How difficult is it to open that marketplace up more than it already is?
Well, it's, don't get me wrong, it will be difficult. It is possible, and we're going to be working on it. Right now, they tell me it is cheaper to get pork from the U.S., ship it over to what we would call their East Coast, because their infrastructure is not able to get the pigs into where the people is. And you go up and down China, all the way up along that East Coast, you know, Beijing, Guangzhou, Shanghai, all those cities up through there are unbelievably huge, and it's just cheaper to ship it over that way than with their infrastructure the way it is.
Let's take up some other topics. Antibiotics, this is a topic that not only the pork industry, but most of the livestock industry has to grapple with. What's the discussion points for antibiotics and from both sides of the issue?
Well, as Louise Slaughter has introduced a bill on banning the use of antibiotics, and we are dead set against that. As we all know, healthy livestock is safe food. We've been using antibiotics only when we have to keep a safe, healthy product. It's not that any producer out there can abuse and overuse antibiotics, because we can't. You can't afford that. Our margins are very tight. Until just here recently, we've been losing money, $20 a pig, until that changed here in about February. And so there is no relatively course of why that we should not keep our antibiotics. If we don't keep antibiotics and keep the animals safe and healthy, then we won't have a safe food system. So it's very important that we keep our antibiotics use.
We're talking to Sam Carney. He's from Adair, Iowa, and the president of the National Pork Producers Council. This is The Farming World. More in a moment.
Learnard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Learnard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids, to farmers throughout East Central Illinois. Learnard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
It's National Jelly Bean Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1763, Jared Elliott died. Elliott was an American colonial clergyman and agronomist who wrote essays upon field husbandry. a tome about reducing inefficiency and waste in colonial farming methods. He also invented a drill which would open a furrow, plant seed, and drop manure in a single operation. In 1778, James Hargreaves died. He was the English inventor of the spinning jenny, the first practical application of multiple spinning of raw cotton by a machine. In 1832, Julius Sterling Morton was born. He was the founder of Arbor Day, first observed in Nebraska on April 10, 1872. In 1889, the U.S. opened Oklahoma to homesteaders, and the Oklahoma land rush officially began at 12 o'clock noon. In 1913, Thomas Wright of New Jersey patented a method to load ice onto refrigerator railroad cars. In 1945, Robert Elmer Horton died. Horton was an American hydraulic engineer whose studies on rainfall drainage established a basis for the analysis of soil erosion and soil conservation. 1 month before he died, Horton published a 95-page landmark paper that summarized 2 decades of study on rainfall drainage. And in 1970, the first Earth Day was celebrated, and that's this day in agricultural history.
This is the Farming World News and Interviews from the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Today we're talking with Sam Carney of Adair, Iowa. Mr. Carney is the president of the National Pork Producers Council. Let's continue our conversation, switch topics just a bit. The 2012 Farm Bill will be due to go through Congress eventually. Do you have topics from the pork producers that you'd like to be addressed in the new Farm Bill?
Well, yeah, we've got we're just starting to put our Farm Bill task force together. We're going to start. They're going to have listening sessions that start here, I believe, the end of this month. I haven't heard the dates yet, but they're supposedly coming out, and maybe they are out. But we will be working to see if what we would like to put in the Farm Bill. There's several ideas, as we'll have producers throughout the different states on this task force, and we will start putting together what we might want to add in there, what things we may not want to see in there, and we're going to have to work with both the House and Senate Ag Committees on this, and keep our very involved in it, just so protect the livelihood of our producers.
What's your position on corn-based ethanol?
Okay. I know the industry has been taking a lot of flack on that, and let me make this perfectly clear. MPPC is not opposed to the ethanol industry. The part we have problem with is they get the subsidy for the grain towards the ethanol, and it makes it very hard to compete feeding grain to livestock. So 2 years ago, when the explosion of grain markets, and you got to remember, I'm going to be very honest, I raise a lot of grain too, and I sell some grain, but the pork industry was losing money. I mean, they were bleeding red very hard. There's got to be a happy medium in here where people can make money, and that was not working for our industry. The mandate was going out for the ethanol processors, but it was not coming to the animal livestock industry. So it made it very, very difficult for our industry to even operate at that time.
So I'll read this directly from the website. Here's the position from the website. NPPC supports the development and use of alternative and renewable fuels, including ethanol, as a way to reduce the country's dependence on foreign oil, but seeks a level playing field for pork producers to compete for corn. Pork producer delegates support allowing the 51-cent blender's tax credit and the 54-cent import tariff on ethanol to expire. That probably doesn't make you very popular, I would think, with the national corn growers or the state corn growers.
And, you know, we want to work together. I mean, we are us commodities. We're such a small portion of the U.S. population. We need to work together. But there's got to be some kind of thing that this will work. You know, what happens when we have a drought and grain prices skyrocket and we're getting very down on what's left for corn? Who's going to get the last bushel of corn? Is it going to be the livestock industry or going to be the ethanol? You got to remember, livestock industry can't really slow down overnight. An ethanol processor, they can slow their operation down a little bit. We're not able to do that. Pigs need to be fed every morning. They eat the same amount of feed every day. And you've got to finish that product out. So
the NPPC in general is asking for what usually farm organizations ask for on the international trade front or the global trade front, which is a level playing field without subsidies. The undue subsidies, in your opinion, I suppose, to support a particular industry.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a fair way to way to categorize it?
Yeah, that's what I would say.
All right.
Yes.
So let's see. What else do we have that we should probably talk about? A couple of other things. World Pork Expo is coming up. That happens this summer.
You bet.
In Iowa?
In Iowa, at the Iowa State Fair in Des Moines. It's June 9th, 10th, and 11th, I believe, and be a whole host of things. We have our trade show, which I believe runs 8 to 5 on Wednesday and Thursday, and then 8 to noon or 1 on Friday. And then we'll have the big grill again, and we're going to have probably last year with H1N1 happening, we did not have so many foreign visitors. We expect that to come back up this next year as we don't see people not holding back because of H1N1. We're going to have several seminars. We'll have the read shows, and there'll be a whole host of things. And of course, probably one of the most important things is there's going to be lots of pork, and so you can eat about as much pork as you possibly can during that show. So,
Mr. Carney, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Thank you very much. I thank you for the opportunity to speak about the National Pork Index.
You're very welcome. Sam Carney of Adara, Iowa. Mr. Carney is the president of the National Pork Producers Council. You've been listening to The Farming World from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.